Welcome to the WFNY Cornercast, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at the Cleveland Guardians baseball team and farm system. Presented to you by the WaitingForNextYear.com network of podcasts. Here are Gerbs, Mitch, and Ethan.
Welcome to the WFNY Cornercast, part of the Green Podcast Network. I am your host, Joe Gerbs Gerberry, alongside Mitch and Ethan tonight. Guys, we are proudly sponsored by the Breaking Tea Company. You can go to breakingtea.com/WFNY and find all of your Cleveland gear, Guardian shirts, Cavs shirts, Brown shirts, a whole bunch of stuff. They have a brand new one, Josh Naylor, All the Smoke shirt. We tweeted out yesterday for them, posted on our Discord for everybody to see. Did you guys check out the shirt? Check out the Josh Naylor All the Smoke shirt? It was a pretty, I liked it a whole bunch.
That would be awesome.
Might in my closet here soon enough. Guys, we were supposed to have day baseball today, and now it appears as though we might have to worry about some roster moves. Today's game was, this is obviously May the 11th, the game was postponed against the White Sox due to a COVID outbreak amongst the Guardians coaches and personnel. So far, there have been no player positives. Terry Francona went down, as well as his replacement for the short term, quote unquote, from the team was DeMarlo Hale, also tested positive. Anything you guys want to glean from this coaching staff? The team now has today Wednesday and now also Thursday off. Might help. Who knows? They didn't really have any length in the bullpen that they needed to rest. But is there anything to glean from the extra day off that we have this week, Mitch?
Not really. Maybe Ahmed Rosario takes more practice in the outfield with the 2 days off.
Shagging some flies out and left.
Yeah, no, he. You know, after seeing him out there, what was that, 2 days ago? After seeing him drop that routine fly ball, I mean, I guess it probably makes him feel better that Gavin Sheets had already done it in the game. Like, it's not that embarrassing because someone else is there with you to commiserate. So I guess I'm happy for him that happened. And now he gets 2 days off to practice. That's the positive I'm getting out of it.
Ethan, anything about the 2 days off here? Besides the commiserating the fact that we're not having day baseball.
I'm genuinely upset about this because I'm off all this week while transitioning to a new job. So I was looking forward to sitting on my couch and watching a game at home, and sadly that didn't happen. As far as COVID goes, hopefully tomorrow, which would have been their normal travel day, nobody else tests positive. Hopefully it stays isolated in the coaching staff. As far as I've seen, Sandy Alomar, who's managed this team before, hasn't cropped up as one of the positives. So as long as the travel party can make it to Minnesota and they can field the team, that's fine. But as for the 2 days off, I think it'll really help everybody nurse the hangover from how drunk Monday night's game was.
But, funny story, it doesn't even matter if a player gets it as long as they're asymptomatic because they don't get tested.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know what MLB's updated guidelines were these days. I knew about the roster rules and being able to bring guys not on the 40-man up, but I didn't know what the testing policies were.
Yeah, so hopefully no one gets any symptoms, and you know, we move on to Friday's game against the Twins, which is a big matchup.
It is a big matchup. We're the team's looking, you know, the standings are making it look like it's a matchup for future implications here. So.
I mean, it's 1 month in. I don't know about we don't want to count our chickens. I'm not sure Minnesota or Cleveland is going to compete for this division. We'll see.
Yeah. Just real quick, last thing on COVID stuff. If there are players that test positive, what do you guys think? Who is the next ones up from AAA that you would think? If there's an outfield bat, an infield bat, obviously Gabriel Arias would have been one of them, but he is now on the IL with the broken hand. Who would be the guys that we're looking at on the roster offensive side that would be up if they were pressed into duty. Thinking Richie Palacios, probably.
Yeah. Richie Palacios would definitely come back. And, you know, it depends on... I guess Richie Palacios can technically play infield, although we haven't seen it.
I thought there was a guy that played on the infield.
What was that?
I thought there was played on the infield.
In Cleveland?
I thought so. I thought there was a day one. Let me look at that. Let me check on that. I will. You go ahead and Ethan. Anybody that you can think of on the infield or on the pitching staff?
Palacios is an obvious one. He's already had a small stint up here. Is on the 40-man roster. Depending on who's involved, you might see Brian Lavastida from the pitching staff. You might see Tobias Myers. I know Kirk McCarty is currently with the team right now. I think he's still the fill-in for Yu Chang at the moment. But yeah, with the injuries to Gabriel Arias, and now especially in Double-A with Brian Rocchio, that pool of potential players is shortened to guys who you might pull from outside the 40-man to come up and play.
Which they're allowed to do for COVID players, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then, you know, you probably see, if it's an outfielder, you might see Anthony Alford. He's a guy with major league experience who they just signed from Pittsburgh. You know, they could just fill him in. He's basically, you know, just like an Oscar Mercado pre-2022 type of, like, don't expect anything offensively from this guy, but he can play defense fine.
Same there with like a Daniel Johnson. Jets played with Cleveland before. If they don't have to add him back to the 40-man roster, he could come up and play a game or two if they need it.
That makes
sense. Although I still feel like there's a reason they brought in Anthony Alford.
Reasons unbeknownst to all of us.
Yes.
Okay. We've done enough on COVID. No players right now, so we're hoping that continues, and we are going to have a game on Friday that actually involves Major League players. So, obviously, the biggest news of this week we've had since we recorded, Josh Naylor decided to go off on Monday night. Had 8 RBIs in his from the 8th inning beyond. First player in Major League history to have that many RBIs that late in the game without having any before the 8th inning. Mitch, what do you have? I mean, Josh Naylor, one, he seems to be playing only first base now. His last game at all in right field was the last week of April. So, I mean, it's 2 weeks, but with such a small sample size, we kind of have to go off of what we have. And on the lineup today that was announced, Naylor was the DH and Franmil Reyes was in right field for Miles Straw day off in center. Mercado was in center. Kwan was in left. Are they going to use Franmil in right field and Owen Miller at second base when Josh is getting that seems to be the plan, at least. Or, you know, if Ahmed's out in the outfield, Owen's at second, Jimenez at short.
I mean, I really think they're trying to make a roster where they can mix and match a little bit to try and get guys in. Like, as much as we were annoyed that they, like, threw Ahmed out in left field once and then stopped that plan, they've shown some sort of commitment to continuing that thing. So you can see Andrés Giménez at shortstop and second base, Owen Miller at second and first base, Josh Naylor at first, DH. And like you said, he hasn't been playing right field as much, but... I mean, that's fine. It's looking like Owen Miller at second a little more and Josh at first. But, you know, they want to get all these guys plate appearances. That's what it's all about. So that's the beauty of having guys like Owen Miller who can play second base and first base and third base if you need him. And, you know, I think he's played some corner outfield, actually, if you needed him in a pinch. I mean, I think that's really the goal here. But, you know, they need to do whatever they can to get Josh Naylor into the lineup right now. I mean, over the last 7 games, he has a .417 average, .444 on base, .875 slugging, 3 homers. He's been incredible. And, like, I was telling one of my friends the other day, like, if this guy is good, he is just going to be so much fun. Like, everyone is going to love him because the energy and the enthusiasm he plays the game with is so infectious. Like, you can't help but like love the guy. So I mean, I really hope that, you know, this is a semi-regular occurrence, that Josh Naylor just like takes over games occasionally throughout the season. That'll be awesome. And everyone will love him. He'll be a Cleveland hero.
Yeah, I'm okay with Josh Naylor taking over games. That works for me, especially because, as I wrote earlier this week, he's probably one of my favorite players on the roster. So
exactly, Ethan, that's what I'm saying.
Ethan, what do you have on Josh on Naylor?
So, loving the energy first and foremost. I'm a big fan of anybody who shushes a crowd after they make a big play. But beyond that, the composure of shushing the crowd and then going into the dugout and going absolutely berserk. Love that energy. Big, big guy in the clubhouse, obviously, both physically and as far as team morale goes.
Right.
And, you know, it's really impressive. We talked last week about, you know, we want to see Naylor get some more lift under the ball. We want to start seeing him use some of that power. Well, in the last week, he's really delivered on that. His ISO has jumped up to 264. He's hit, is it three home runs in just the last like 4 days?
I know it's three in the last seven. That's what I had up.
Okay, so three in the last two games, because he hit two on Monday and then he scored the lone run for the Guardians against Giolito with a solo shot.
That was a beautiful oppo swing.
Which surprised me to see Naylor go oppo. We know he has the power, but he hasn't really hit a ton of baseballs that way.
yeah, he's just up there like looking to just crush the ball. He's up there like pissed off. It's great.
Doubling back to what you said earlier about Ahmed, though, for what it's worth, had today's game not been postponed, he was penciled in at shortstop. So two games of Ahmed in left field, and then Andres moved back to second base. Had today been played.
Yeah. Which, whatever, like, you know, and that, I'm happy that they're trying the left field Ahmed thing at all.
Right. I think that's, honestly, I don't expect them to put Ahmed in left and leave him there. As Mitch said, I think they enjoy having these guys play so many different positions and being able to mix and match as it comes up with matchups. Because they've shown such an affinity for platoons in the past, it's kind of hard to take that out of them and move it around. So, but I'm okay with Ahmed at short if it's once or twice a week. It's when it's every day with no regard to defense. That's when it's a little bit questioning. So,
yeah. No, another thing to consider, it's just that these teams just more like they know more than we know, and the chasm is like widening, right? Like, they have ideas of like, all right, Ahmed Rosario has this type of swing and this pitcher is conducive to allowing contact on this type of hitter. Therefore, like, we need to get Ahmed Rosario in this game, so we're going to throw him in left field. Or, you know, it's just like they're playing like 8D chess and we're stuck on 2D.
Checkers even.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just like it's really annoying because like I want to be able to complain about stuff in good conscience, and I still do. But like at the end of the day, like I think it's something that maybe everyone needs to hear a little bit, which is that like this team has like logic behind everything that it does. It's not gonna just do stuff because it feels like it.
Yeah, these guys are definitely making decisions. I mean, it's a multi-million-dollar business. They're not making decisions because of random happenstance.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, this is a team that has, like, I mean, you could argue that the Colorado Rockies are a, you know, billion-dollar organization who are doing things just off happenstance. But the Guardians have just traditionally just, you know, they've been a team that is driven by data and not by emotion or anything at all, and much to the fans' chagrin. But now it feels like the two have kind of aligned. The data has met like the fan sentiment, and we're all happy. And even if this team's not a playoff team, I think we can all agree it's a fun team.
For sure. Ethan, anything on the let me blow your mind with two things on Naylor real quick that I uncovered. One of which with Mitch help. His Monday was his 8 RBIs on Monday represents 36% of his season total thus far of RBI, which is just an absolutely crazy number to have in one game. Even if you think about it this way, you know, we are obviously RBI is a stat that we don't necessarily like as a Sabre friendly situation, but we can all agree that 80 is a good number of RBI on a season. That's 10% in one game if he got if he ended the year with 80 RBI. And the watch his help was he already has more RBI this year than he did all of last year. Going through, he has played in, I had the game number right here, 20 games so far this year, a very nice number of 69 games last year, and already has one more RBI than the entire 2021 season. So it just goes to show how much he's doing. He's hitting well this year, and what he seems to be doing. Ethan, any last thoughts on Naylor before we move on?
His strikeout rate's down, which is contributing to that. He's done a ton of this damage in the last 2 weeks alone. And like you said, 49 fewer games, he's already eclipsed his RBI total. 49 fewer games, he's just two home runs below what he hit all of last season. And I think what's really impressive so far is that it feels relatively sustainable. Obviously, you'd like to see his walk numbers increase. He has just a 3.9% walk rate so far, but he has played a couple fewer games than the rest of this team. But, you know, even looking at his WOBA is sitting at 430. You might think that that would come down, suggest some regression to the mean, but his expected WOBA is not that far behind at 410. And beyond that, his BABIP's not outrageously high either, so it suggests he's not really that lucky at all. He's just seeing the ball like a beach ball right now and hitting it all over the yard.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. He's not, like, the analyst in me is, like, all about, all right, like, Josh Naylor, he is crushing it right now in a way he never has before. Like, got to find something that he's doing differently. What changed? What did changed about his approach or his swing or whatever? And, like, I don't see anything that changed. Like, his chase rate is the same. His contact is a little better, but it's not significantly better. He's hitting more line drives this year, but that's, like, you know, I think that's more a result of his good hitting rather than a cause. It's not like, you know, he's hitting more line drives, therefore he's good. He's good right now, therefore he's hitting more line drives. I mean, he's just, like, crushing the ball. And, like, I don't know if, you know, we've seen a glimpse of this in the 2020 wildcard game against the Yankees when he just absolutely, you know, lit up the Bronx's pitching. And, you know, I've got a friend here in school with me who's a big Yankees fan and, you know, follows the game closely. Like, no one outside of Cleveland really has any right to know anything about Josh Naylor, I guess, in San Diego as well. But this guy just remembers Josh Naylor as the Yankee killer because he just hit like three balls off the wall or over the wall in that game. And so we've seen Josh Naylor go off like this before. I mean, if he can extend this for a significant amount of time, or he can do this three or four more times this year, like, that's a real piece. Like, I'm really excited. This is so much fun. That's all I have to say about Josh Naylor. He's not doing anything different. He's just being Josh Naylor, and it's working for him, and that rules.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I always enjoy when the production matches the expectation, the mindset, the game plan, I guess. You know, we've talked a lot of it on this podcast about the changes of the game plan this year from years previous, where they've gone more contact, and Naylor was one of those guys that they acquired as a like a precursor to this, where it was contact first, and he was one of the guys I remember, at least, that you know, it seemed that way. So it's nice to see that this is actually working out for him. It's like you said, yeah. It's just happening. There's no real rhyme or reason as to why it's happening. It's just happening. I'm happy to be here as well. So
Josh Naylor is too stubborn to do anything different. He just believes in Josh Naylor, and Josh Naylor is proving Josh Naylor to be correct.
Josh Naylor's doing Josh Naylor things.
Exactly. So. Josh Naylor seems like the kind of guy to refer to himself in the third person, right?
I can see that.
Yeah. Maybe. I want it to happen. Josh Naylor.
We'll talk to him about it. If you're listening,
Josh Naylor.
Josh Naylor, if you're hearing your name all the time, he definitely is a guy that you say that both names of. You don't just call him Josh. You don't just really call him Naylor. He is Naylor.
Yeah, you know all his teammates call him Josh Naylor. Like, how you doing,
right,
Josh?
Right, 100%. Oh, hey, Josh Naylor, come over here real quick. I have a funny meme.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I stand by the fact that Josh Naylor calls himself Josh Naylor.
Right. Moving off of Josh Naylor, the heating up of Frias. I call him Franny. I don't know. I'm calling him Franny for some reason. He was hitting like a Franny at the start of the year through March and April, when this is a whole bunch of arbitrary endpoints. Leave me alone. He had 11 WRC plus, just 11, just two numbers, not three, two numbers, 11 yeah. WRC plus March through April. In the month of May, through these 11 days, it's a 191. So whatever happened with the calendar turn for Fran Mill seems to be working. Ethan, what have you seen that is working for Fran Mill that was not working previously?
Purely based on the eye test, because it's not perfect right now. He's definitely laying off more of those away breaking pitches. Not perfectly, but it's getting better, which is extending his at-bats, which is getting him more opportunities to put the barrel on something. And we've talked the last 2 weeks that Franmil was going to be the engine that gets this offense up and running. And since the start of May, you've seen a relatively more consistent offense out there, minus the one-run dud against Chicago Tuesday night. So look at it this way. He played 18 games in April/March, and he hit 135. In 10 fewer games so far in May, he's hitting 387. He's eclipsed his hit total for the season through those first 18 games by two. He's tied his RBI total. The strikeouts are still kind of there. Now he's going after some high fastballs, has been the shift I've noticed, especially up and in has been a consistent issue while he's even been on this hot streak. But he's not trying to do a ton with the ball. He's not trying to hit it out of the park. He's trying to get singles the opposite direction. He's trying to find a gap. He's trying to get a grounder up the middle. And that's something that I think I heard Chris Valleca told him that he has to do, is that he's got to start working on hitting the ball the other way and creating opportunities for himself. Because doing that and proving that you can hit the ball the other way, they're not going to be able to pitch you that way. They're going to have to bring the ball in, and he's going to get something that he can just turn into a mammoth moonshot eventually. So we've talked about it ad nauseum, that he's going to be the key to this machine, and it's starting to look that way. He's starting to get the bat on the ball, and some luck finally is going his way.
Yeah, luck is a key word here. I mean, over the last 7 days, he is a 667 BABIP, and on the season, he actually has a 352 BABIP. So he's even really getting lucky on the batted balls on the season as a whole. But yeah, over the last 7 days, the strikeout rate is still high, but it's more what, you know, in line, I guess, with what we would want from Franmil Reyes's numbers. But what Ethan said is right. Like, ultimately, we want the power from Franmil Reyes. That is why he's in the lineup. He's not here to hit singles. We have lots of guys to hit singles. But the key right now is getting Franmil Reyes back to hitting homers. And if, you know, the choice is between Franmil Reyes, you know, hitting the occasional single, hitting liners the opposite way, you know, and him just striking out half the time, you know, I'll choose the first one. So, you know, hopefully this is not final form Franmil of the season. Like, hopefully this is not the final fix of what ailed him. But it's hard to deny that it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. You could see in that Oakland series, like Ethan said, when he was starting to started to thaw a little bit when he was going the opposite way. And we've long heard that's how you start breaking out of slumps, is start looking at the ball, taking it the other way, and it seems to be working. We definitely want to see Franmil get heated up and get hot, stay hot, break the puzzle off, whatever you know, idiom you want to go with here. But yeah, it's nice to see him doing that. I was looking through, just putzing around StatCast, and he has really gotten unlucky this year. His hard hit percentage is, I think, like 50th or something like that in Major League Baseball. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. Just early on in the year, it was right at people, and I think that kind of got, I think that seemed to mess with his head a little bit, and started trying to push and press, and sort of wanted to make things happen. But whatever Valleca is doing, whatever they are working with him on, seems to be the cure here. So, Mitch, you had found something on Jose, who was the player of the month for April, and hasn't been doing as much at the plate through May so far.
Jose Ramirez,
what was it that you had?
He's just having a really funny last seven games. First of all, he's only seeing 31.6% of pitches in the zone. They've basically decided to stop throwing him strikes, which, who can blame them? He's continuing to never swing and miss, as he does, just 4.1% of pitches. Because, you know, he's not offering. He's seeing only 30% strikes. But very frustratingly, I think, for some, certainly for Jose Ramirez, is that, you know, he's not damaging the ball on contact like he was in the month of April. Just a 172 batting average in the last seven games, 103 ISO, very low for Jose Ramirez, 179 BABIP, probably related to the fact that he's just hitting a bunch of routine fly balls. And that's frustrating. And yet, he still has an above average batting line, because he is walking in 21.6% of his plate appearances while striking out nearly 2.7% of them. So despite the fact that he has a 172 batting average in the last seven games, he has a 351 on base percentage, because he is just walking so gosh darn much. Yeah, he has walked eight times in the last seven games, which is just like an abominable, an incredibly high amount. And you struck out, what, one time? Let me confirm that. That is the case. Yeah, he has one strikeout and eight walks in his last week. So if you're not going to hit the ball hard, you might as well, find first base in other ways. And that's really what makes Jose Ramirez special. He just has such a – I feel like if we don't talk about Jose Ramirez and something interesting he's doing every single time you know, we podcast here, we're doing our jobs wrong.
Doing a disservice.
Yeah, he's the most special player, you know, of my lifetime in this city, and he's certainly the most special player on this roster now.
Absolutely.
Finding slumping.
Ways to make it work. Finding ways to make it be the way. Yeah.
He's a 179 BABIP, and he still has an above average WRC plus because he is walking so much and striking out so little. It's just, you know, I feel so lucky we get to watch him, and I feel so lucky we get to watch him for 7 more years. I'm just like, I'm still over the moon about that.
Yeah. Ethan, anything on Jose's May so far?
I'm going to continue to beat this dead horse. This is exactly why you need Franmil Reyes to be hot and to be playing well. And you said, what, 31%-ish of pitches in the zone so far in the month of May?
Yep. Well, the last 7 days.
Well, of course he's hitting. I mean, there's only been 8 games in May, so basically, yeah. But of course he's only hitting 176. They're not giving him anything to hit. But that's going to be the brilliance, because if Franmil gets hot, you're top of the lineup, not worried about Straw, not worried about Kwan, definitely not worried about Jose. But if you have Franmil in the 4 spot, beating the cover off the ball, Owen Miller lacing doubles every other at-bat like he's done so far, and then you're sprinkling in Andrés Giménez, who, oh, by the way, is hitting 340-something.
My boy.
Who are you going to pitch around? Sure,
sorry,
pitch around.
Did you invoke the name of Everyday Andres? I don't know.
I did invoke Everyday Andres.
Everyday Andres is one of our like better nicknames at Wade. Everyday Andres is good.
Everyday Andres. What is
he's hitting 333 on the season after Tuesday's
game. It's just really, really apt, too, because he's just like, he's always there. He's always playing great defense. Even though he never walks, he's still working pitchers. Like it feels like it's never an easy at bat for anyone. Like for the pitcher, I should say. Like, I love Andrés Giménez. Oh my god!
But he's done such a good job. And I know you asked me about Jose, and now we're gonna talk about Andrés.
You're fine. No, you're good.
He's done such a good job in his first 26 games of working the count that I think he can do that consistently, and the walk numbers will come with that. We talked about it this week on the website, looking at his swing and take profiles and how he's getting ahead in the count significantly more than he has in past seasons. And he's using that to his advantage to get pitches to hit, and he's punishing them. He's not missing them. So he's got a simplified approach. He's not trying to do too much with the baseball, and it's working for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I think this is just a little thing that really bothered me over the course of the week. Is in the game that we somehow have alluded to when talking about Josh Naylor, but haven't talked about directly, when Cleveland was down 8-2 in the 9th inning and majestically came back, scoring 6 runs in the 9th, 1 run in the 10th, and 3 in the 11th to win the game against the hated White Sox 12-9. In that game, an unsung hero was Andrés Giménez.
It was not unsung by Josh Naylor, who went out of his way in the post game press conference to discuss Andrés Everyday gave him the props.
So that's good. That's good on Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor, as a hero of that game, is very sung. He is a very sung hero of that game. Andrés Giménez only sung by Josh Naylor, apparently, for hitting that leadoff homer.
Terry Francona said something post game too.
Okay, I should watch the post game. But anyway, yeah. Andrés Giménez, basically the point that I was trying to make was that he hit that opposite field home run to start the inning. And everyone was like, wow, that ball carried a lot. It didn't look that impressive off the bat. He hit the ball 100 miles per hour, and his swing is just very conducive to like putting lift and good spin on the ball. Like, I think the power is real with him. Like, I think we're going to see a few more home runs that look like that, where it's like, I mean, even his like absolute bomb a few weeks ago, not the grand slam. He had another home run on like a low curveball. I can't remember exactly the situation, but it looked like a routine flyout and it went like 424 feet. The guy has power. Like, let's not chalk up Andrés Giménez homers to like carrying well. or like the wind aiding them. Like, dude can hit. I love Andrés Giménez. I could talk about him for an hour.
Yeah. We always, I remember when he was acquired and the conversation was like, what if this is Lindor? And we're getting there. We're getting close. Yeah. And it's actually happening a little bit. So
Lindor's
a bit of a lofty comparison still.
Yeah.
Let's not.
I said, we're getting there.
We're like, well,
I did argue for it in the article that went live on the website earlier this week that, you know, his offensive floor is a lot higher than I think people are giving him credit for. And a lot of people, I think, wrote him off after that abysmal 2021 campaign. Everybody looked at those first 30 games and how that dragged his stats down. Nobody looked at the fact that you probably saw a more accurate version of him down the stretch when he got called back up later in the season and hit a little bit over 250. And now he's starting to show growth year over year now from 22 to 23. And he probably won't hit 300 the whole year. But if Andrés hits 270, he's an all-star. That's bottom line.
With some power, right?
Yeah.
He's not a guy who's going to hit single digit homers. Yeah. He's, he is a guy who can hit for some power. And like, let's not forget about the amazing run prevention he provides. I mean, we've seen some incredible plays this year. And, the pitchers have to love him, right? The pitcher. Yeah. I mean,
I would say the pitchers would be in love with them if they were actually getting ground balls. But again, I've mentioned before that this year, for whatever reason, they seem to be going fly ball more than ground ball, despite the dead end ball. So, I don't know that it has normalized yet, but they still are going fly ball heavy to ground ball. But that's a nice little
97th percentile of outs above average.
Yep. Nice. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, if you just allow home runs to the Blue Jays, you can't, you know, reap the benefits of Andrés Giménez.
Speaking of bad outings against the Blue Jays, that's a nice
little transition. Yeah, I was trying to throw you into that.
I know. I was there. I was getting there.
Lob City action going on over here.
This is for Ohio over here. What is what is going on with Shane Bieber here? Is this who he is now with low velo? He's lost almost a full 2 miles per hour off of his four seam fastball from a year ago. The nothing seems to be as fast, and we've talked about it this whole season so far. That everybody seems to be losing velo except for McKenzie, but seems to be the one that's like showing it the worst here. Is there an injury that we need to be worried about? Is this who he is now? Can he be effective? He wasn't in the game on Saturday last week when he had the first game of doubleheader. But is there a way that he can be effective going down if this isn't an injury and if this is what we have to look forward to with Shane Bieber? Mitch?
I mean, okay, first of all, in regards to losing velocity, he has lost over 2 miles per hour on last year, a year that he lost over 1 mile per hour from the year prior. And his Cy Young award-winning season of 2020, he averaged 94.1 miles per hour on the fastball. He is now averaging 90.6 miles per hour on the fastball. That is a 3.5 mile per hour difference. That is like an absolutely like gap. There's a massive gap from the.
I don't know the adjective word of chasm, but I'm
going to go with what you said. I completely stole this. What was that?
I think you were looking for precipitous drop.
It is a precipitous drop. The chasmus thing was already done on Effectively Wild, and it was just stuck in my head. I completely like jobbed them of that, so I should give them credit. But no, The thing is he was effective until like he was effective until that start, right? Like the velocity was down and we were all just kind of like, okay, the velocity's down, but I guess he's still effective, so we can't really talk about it. And then he had a bad start and everyone's like, what's wrong with Bieber? And it's kind of halfway between those things, right? Like it's not gonna be a terrible start every time. The Blue Jays are really, really good. He didn't have his good stuff that day and they punished him. Like that happens. At the same time, like, is this guy going to compete for Cy Young Awards throwing 90.6 miles per hour? No, sir. I do not think he will be. He doesn't get the swings and misses that he once got. I mean, even last year, he was getting 12 and a half strikeouts per nine or 33.1% of strikeouts per batter face. You know, both those are much stronger than this year. Yeah, I mean, he, as it stands right now, like, he might not be my favorite pitcher to watch on this Guardians team because he's looking worse than Tristan McKenzie to start the year. And it's really painful to watch a guy that we saw dominate just 2 years ago. Like, you know, some of the best pitching. He won the AL or the All-Star Game MVP 3 years ago. You know, it's tough to watch, but right now, like this tough to watch Bieber is still pretty good. Like, you know, the second best pitcher on the team at worst. And, you know, it's not going to be that bad going forward. And hopefully he gains his velo back. Hopefully he gains his velo back and, we'll be fine. Like you asked in this question, Stem, you were like, is there an injury? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I definitely right. don't know. I hope not.
You're the medical guy. I count on. No, I'm just.
Yeah, no, it's definitely his, you know, the short head of the biceps tendon is wearing on his labrum. No, I have no idea. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Ethan, what do you think about Bieber? Is there a way for him to be effective?
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
There's definitely a way for Bieber to be effective, but Gerbs, when it was just you and I last week, we talked about this too, about how the alarm bells are firmly ringing in my ears.
Yeah.
About the entire pitching staff, but especially with Bieber. And, you know, going back, he did have the shoulder injury last year. And we hope that, you know, recovering from that and the surgery that he had isn't leading to all of this. But I'm still clinging to that sliver of hope that this is an organizational design thing because everybody's down, that they're trying to find some way to extend arms. But it's not likely at this point. We've seen enough of these guys that they really should be accelerating by now, but he's down a tick or two across the board. And Mitch touched on it. His swing and miss rate is down on every single pitch. And that's where Bieber thrives. You know, the rest of this team, Quantrill and Savali are ground ball pitchers. Plesac on at his best is supposed to be a strikeout slash weak fly ball kind of guy. McKenzie's going to be a strikeout weak fly ball kind of guy, but Bieber thrives on the strikeout. And if he doesn't have that going, if he doesn't have the swings and misses and his pitches aren't what they used to be, he's down some spin rates and all of that, then guys are just going to tee off on him. So if he's going to find a way to be successful like this, it's probably going to have to come down to sequencing, maybe relying more on the slider, maybe trying to cut the cutter, no pun intended. It's not a pitch he throws often, but his most successful pitch this year in a small sample size has been the changeup. So, you know, if it's going back to basics and being a fastball slider changeup kind of guy and just getting batters off of or off balance in the box with, you know, changes of speed and all of that. There's no doubt in my mind that Bieber could do that. But like Mitch said, I don't think there's a path to him contending for another Cy Young if this is the new Shane Bieber. Now, if you want to put a positive spin on that, when we had Mizell on before the season, he said Bieber had already had his eyes set on testing for agency. Well, maybe he's not worth $300 million anymore.
Yeah, but I also on the flip side of that coin, I don't know if the Guardians are exactly itching to sign him to a long-term extension right now either.
No, but you know, I'm going to say the quiet part out loud and just kind of float that one out into the ether. Yeah.
No, that's fair. And that's I mean, that is an interesting thought, like what happens to his long-term value right now.
Right, and it's not like the team doesn't have arms on the way. I mean, yes. With Daniel Espino, with the one and only Logan Allen now, Xavion.
Hunter Gaddis?
Huh?
Hunter Gaddis?
Hunter Gaddis. There are guys that are a year or two away now. That
Tanner Burns?
That can come
Gavin
up.
Williams, and Doug Nikhazy.
Xavion Curry?
Love me.
I said Xavion Curry. I was trying to say Xavion Curry. Okay. No, I agree with you guys. And to your point, Ethan, with signing an extension with Bieber, you know, there are guys on the farm that are coming up that are going to be that are close, that are going to need spots, that are going to be pushing guys out. We thought for the longest time that it was going to be Plesac and maybe Savali or Quantrill, but if it keeps going this way, and this is very doom and gloom here as I'm getting into this, but it doesn't look good right now. I mean, I looked a little bit more into Savant page. His whiff rate is down almost 10% from last year. His zone contact is up almost over 5%. And zone swing is up 5%, 6% actually. I mean, he's being. Bieber was able to be around the strike zone. We know his MO is throwing strikes, and was able to do it when he had a better fastball and a better command, and he's just not getting those things right now. So I'm not saying he's lost. I'm not saying that we're getting rid of him or anything like that. We're not throwing him to the fishes and tossing him out, but Tristan McKenzie is definitely the ace right now. So
Shane Bieber had one bad start this year against the team that employs George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez. I could keep going. Like, he had a bad start. He had a bad start this year. And yes, the warning signs are there and they are scary. But at the end of the day, like, I kind of said this in the beginning, like, he had had these warning signs all year and we were all kind of dancing around it because he had been good all year. And then he has one bad start and now we're all like freaking out. Like, no, not that much has changed. He's had a bad start. Like, he's still Shane Bieber. He'll still probably be pretty decent.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move to the bullpen where there are guys that are looking good. Ethan, do you have anything, Where do you feel about the bullpen right now? I say a very broad, the bullpen is looking good. It seems as though that if the starters are giving up runs early, it seems the vast majority of the bullpen is actually holding the runs. And if there is one guy, if there is an instance where they're giving up runs, it seems to be one guy a night and then everybody else is pretty good. So, go over Ethan. What do you feel about the bullpen overall right now?
If you put a gun to my head and asked me to give them a letter grade, I think I could pretty comfortably give them a B minus so far.
I was going to B. When you said that, I was going with B in my head. So
it doesn't make me not want to chug Pepto watching them, because I still get terrible indigestion when some of these guys are out on the mound. You know, I can tell you right now that I've seen enough that I'm out on Anthony Goes. It's a coin toss whether or not he knows where his pitches are going when he comes out of that pen, and I really don't think that that's anything that's going to improve for an over 30 converted reliever. You know, yay, you throw 100 and you're a lefty. Do you know where that baseball is going? Because I don't. So it's little things like that. Trevor Stephan this year has been a pleasant surprise. We kind of have this really weird in-between with Emmanuel Clase to start the season where you're just not sure what you're going to get. The game that Naylor, you know, stuck his claim to went as long as it did and gave him an opportunity to hit an extra three-run home run because Clase couldn't close it down in the 10th. So it's interesting right now. But you are seeing decent contributions. Henches has been really good. I know Mitchell will be happy to hear me admit that. I already said Trevor Stephan was surprising. In small doses, even smaller than what he's been given, I think Eli Morgan has a shot to be a real effective pitcher out of this bullpen. And I've just been relatively happy to not see Brian Shaw thrown out in every high-leverage situation imaginable. Those chances have been going to Trevor Stephan and Nick Sandlin. Sandlin has also been a little bit kind of back and forth, but I think I can relatively give them a B-. It is not it's not a bane of this team right now.
It doesn't feel like Nick Sandlin's been bad because he is at 4.09 ERA, but he has been bad. He has pitched 11 innings this season, and he has walked, let's see here, he has walked 8 batters and struck out 6 batters. That's bad. That's not what you want. And that works out to be a 656 FIP, fielding independent pitching for you kids at home. That's not what you want. He's been, by Fangraphs WAR, he has been the worst relief pitcher on the team this season. I believe in him still. I'm not saying like he's bad or anything like that, but I think he's been pretty bad. Like he just hasn't been able to throw strikes. It's been unfortunate.
He's another guy, though, he's just in his second season. He's coming off of an injury, too. So
No doubt. I still have plenty of stock in why am I blanking on his name?
The Sandman.
And Nick Sandlin, of course. I still have plenty of stock in him. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying he's been really bad this year. But on the flip side of that, Sam Hendricks has been just absolutely incredible. Like, you mentioned him, like, but let me read you his numbers this year. He has an 0.69 ERA.
Nice.
Oh man, that sounds fluky. Nice. He has an 0.72 FIP and a 1.22 xFIP because he has struck out 12 batters per 9 and walked under 1 and yet to allow a homer. He's giving up 64% grounders, thanks to the fact that he is throwing a new pitch or he's throwing an old pitch much more often. He has basically decided to start throwing a sinker way more. So now he has two different fastballs that he throws over 20% of the time. Combine that with the slider and still the occasional curveball. And it's just been really, really effective for him. Like he has been an absolute revelation. Like it's hard to just find... It's hard to pinpoint exactly what a guy is doing differently to have success when, you know, it's relief pitching. He's pitched like 10 innings this year. But he has just looked absolutely incredible. And, you know, between Hentges, between Clase and Stephan, like those are three like really exciting young players that could be here for a long time. And then like, you know, guys we've had in this role in the past, say Nick Whitgren or what was that guy's name?
Ramirez. Dan Otero.
Oh, Dan Otero. Who is Ramirez? I'll figure this out when I'm not talking anymore. Neil Ramirez. I got it. There's a bunch of you two. It's like, okay, like they're putting them there.
Blake Parker.
Like, Blake Parker, sure. Like now it's like three young guys who are doing really well. And it's just, hard not to be excited about them. The stuff, you know, watching them, the eye test, the stuff, it backs it up. It backs up the results. The peripherals back them up. And these guys should be on the team for years to come. And it's pretty darn exciting. And I don't see any reason why we can't expect this team to, like, continue to grow the bullpen. It's not going to get worse. You know, we got Cody Morris down there. We got Tobias Harris, Tobias Harris is a basketball player for the 76ers. Tobias Myers.
I was like, that doesn't sound like a name that I remember.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar, but not in the way that I know it.
Connor Pilkington looked really good against the Blue Jays.
He did. I was excited for Pilkington.
Peyton Battenfield, exciting. Like, even if the peripherals haven't looked that great in the minors this year, I mean, there's a bunch of guys, like, in the next few years, if they're throwing high leverage innings for the Guardians, will not shock me.
Yeah. I was happy with Pilkington. I always want to call him Plinkington. I don't know if it's a I watched too much Price is Right growing up. I don't know. Sounds like a name.
What's that Price is Right?
Like a Plinko, the Plinko thing.
No, you know what you're talking about.
That's not Price is Right. Plinko. I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, I guess I'm out. All right, that's fine. So we have a great night, guys. You guys take care. And the one bullpen guy I wanted to mention was Eli Morgan. He has had a bunch of success this year, and Terry Francona has mentioned a bunch that he considers him a weapon, but they mentioned on the telecast that he hasn't been getting a lot of work because they value the length that he has. He's basically a spot starter. And in this early going there, they just don't want to throw him and then need him the next day. So I want to see more Eli Morgan. I want to see more of the inning or two, you know, maybe give some of these guys a little bit of a break in the bullpen. I just want to see a little bit more of Eli Morgan. That's all. I want to see the fastball and the changeup and the thickness that we've talked about in the past. But hoping that we see a little bit of that coming. I don't expect it to, because we've now reached the look ahead portion of the podcast. There are a lot of days off over the next week and a half. Obviously, Cleveland had the random day off today due to COVID. There's a travel day tomorrow to get to Minnesota. Then they have Monday is an off day. Only a two-game set with Cincinnati. And then Thursday is another off day. So by the time we podcast next week, we should only actually have 5 games to go through rather than 6 or 7 like we would hope for. So I don't imagine they're going to need to give guys rest, use Eli Morgan. It's a big series with Minnesota over the weekend, despite the fact that Ethan punched down my idea that this is division work or anything like that that they have to do. What are you guys looking forward to with this twin series? This will be the first time we see the Twins this year. Anything that you're excited about that you want to see? They'll be seeing Byron Buxton for the first time this year. Bunch of changes on Twins. I feel like they made a lot of moves in the offseason.
I'll tell you what I'm excited for. I'm excited to watch Tristan McKenzie pitch on Sunday, as I am every time Tristan McKenzie steps up to the mound. I don't care who he's playing against. He's my boy.
I am firmly on Tristan McKenzie Island as well. I am on the train. I am on the island, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, you're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
The Mick Kool-Aid.
Get a stick jersey or stick shirt for me from Raycom.
Do they have one?
They do. I can show you the link. I'll send you the link for it. Ethan, anything you're excited about for this tweet? Since it's all we have left to go off of.
As a fan of baseball as a whole, very excited to see a healthy Byron Buxton, because that guy is absolutely incredible, and the injuries that he has suffered have taken something fun away from all of us as fans of the sport, regardless of whether or not he's in Cleveland's division and will personally victimize me for the next 3 games. But also at the same time, as far as prospects go, with Carlos Correa currently on the injured list for the Twins, we're all going to get our first look at Royce Lewis, who's played a handful of games so far, who is one of the Twins' top prospects and one of the top prospects in all of baseball. So,
are you a believer?
I'm sorry?
Are you a believer?
I haven't seen him play live yet. I'll let you know after I see him swing a bat in person. But, you know, he's one of those guys. We talked about it last week with Mackenzie Gore, how he was one of those highly touted players for years that just never really seemed to get a chance or break onto the stage, and then got to watch him pitch against Cleveland. So just looking forward to the opportunity to seeing guys that have been talked about for the last 4 or 5 years pretty heavily now getting the chance to see them play.
I think I'm looking forward to Jose Miranda. I have him in two leagues, fantasy leagues, both of
always back to fantasy with you, Gerbs.
Always back to fantasy. I have him in a dynasty league, though. I was able to steal him from a guy, and right as soon as he was getting called up, I got him in a trade. So
I'm excited just
to see if that happened. So what was that?
Let me give you a real answer.
Go for it.
The guy that I'm interested to see, and like the most exciting guys on most exciting guy on the Twins that we haven't talked about yet, is their rookie relief pitcher Joan Duran. Yeah, don't know how to say his name, but his watching him pitch is kind of like if you love baseball, it's kind of just like a divine moment. Like he just has. You know, the guy throws 103 miles per hour.
He's a frequent contributor to Pitching Ninja. And that's usually what I like base my hopes and or of like my interest on what I see. So,
right, and unlike Hunter Green, it seems like, you know, he actually has like pretty incredible stuff and like pretty decent results, all things considered. Been bitten by the home run ball a little bit, but. You know, it's going to be a treat to watch him, just as it is a treat to watch Byron Buxton. I think no one really knows Duran's name yet, so he's a guy to keep an eye out for.
Going to be one of those things where I sit there and watch him pitch and go, oh, God, is this what it's like to watch Classe when your team's down?
Right.
Yeah. I love Classe. Oh, man.
Let's hope that Duran doesn't get a lot of save opportunities this weekend.
They're gonna. You know what? I hope they're probably gonna need to get him work on Sunday when Guardians are up 8-1 in the seventh, and he hasn't pitched all weekend.
When they run a time where they're bringing in really position players to pitch to guys hitting left-handed for the first time ever.
Duran will pitch seventh inning, and then it'll be 8-1 in the eighth, and they'll throw in who will they throw in? Gio Urshela will pitch.
Oof, there's a name.
Yeah. So does that mean Kwan's going to hit a bomb from the right-handed batter's box? Is that going to be our version of Rendon?
Dude, I would not put it past him.
I think the commiserate thing would be Franmil hitting it left-handed.
Or Jose Ramirez. Oh, wait, Jose Ramirez.
He's a switchy, so
I'm
you
a
can't.
Fool. Yeah. I'm a fool. Although, this year he has not been very good from the right side.
Yeah. He has hit a home run. From the right side. He had a grand slam, I think.
He has. That was a silly thing to say. It's like Franmil Reyes. Good point, Gerbs.
I got you. Always here for you. So, all right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Anything else you guys have real quick? No? Nothing?
No.
You're good?
Let's all right. Beat the Twins.
I'm good with this, too. All right.
You guys take care. You're going down, Minnesota.
You guys take care. Take care of yourselves. Good night.
The Korean War has sadly been known as the Forgotten War, but half a century earlier, the United States was locked in a bloody conflict in Asia that's been all but erased from the history books. Hi, I'm Alex Hastie, the host of Ohio vs. the World, an American history podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. In our newest episode, we speak to experts about the Philippine-American War, America's first Asian counterinsurgency conflict. The heroes, the villains, we'll discuss President McKinley, Admiral Dewey, the vicious brutality of the fighting, and the scandals and war crimes that nearly sunk Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Check out our show, Ohio vs. the World, on the Evergreen Podcast Network for our new episode about America's most forgotten war. Now back to the show.